to Jeff, you bad motherfucker.
All right, here we go. Welcome back, podcast world. I'm your host, Rasta Jeff. This is episode 865 of the Grow From Your Heart podcast. You know, I've got another fun episode lined up for us. In today's episode, I'm going to give away free seeds. Hang out. We'll talk more about those free seeds later on in today's podcast. Today, we're going to focus on listener-generated content. That's right. I have a website. That website is iregenetics.com. At the top of that website, there's a row of tabs. One of those tabs does say Grow Help or Grow Questions. If you send me a cool grow question and I read your question here on the podcast, I will send you a coupon code for a free pack of seeds at iredirect.com. Today's first question came from somebody who wants to be called Mike Diesel. Big shout out to my new friend, Mike Diesel. Mike's question goes just like this. Mike says, I've got a two-part question, and I will answer both of those questions for you, buddy. It says, what size grow tent and type of seed do you recommend for a first-time grower? Now, this is a very good question, a very fun question. For a first-time grower, I would recommend something like a 3x3 or a 5x5. If you have room for a 5x5 tent, that is definitely what I would recommend and suggest. If you've got a 3x3, do that. If you need to go smaller, of course, work your way down. But I would recommend that 5x5, that 3x3. Those two tents are very easy to manage, very easy to maintain, very easy to get equipment that fits perfectly inside those tents. Our friends at AC Infinity, if you do go check out acinfinity.com, use coupon code IREE, that will save you a few bucks. Our friends at AC Infinity make a perfect package for a 5x5 tent, a 3x3 tent. You can order everything in one box. It will show up on your front door. You're basically ready to go. All you need are some seeds and some nutrients. It is really easy to do. So I would recommend starting with a 5x5 or a 3x3. Like I said, go smaller as you need to if necessary. I really like the 5x5 for the amount of space, the canopy space in there, and just managing that much space is much easier. That's the right amount of space. Honestly, right now, the next seeds that you purchase from me will have been bred in a 5x5 AC Infinity tent. I like the 5x5 because I can control that environment very perfectly. That 5x5 space is very easy to manage. The temperature, the humidity, the overall VPD. It's easy to manage the amount of plants that fit into there. It's the right amount of space for the right size light. I just think it's a really easy, perfectly manageable space. That 5x5 is a really ideal space for a new grower. So I've said it enough, a 3x3, a 5x5. Of course, I'm going to advertise the AC Infinity tents, the lights, the blowers, the fans, everything. AC Infinity kicks ass. They make it super easy. Check out the new AC Infinity AI controller. You basically tell it, I want a veg, and then it says you're in veg, and it sets all your gear to veg for you, and you veg. Then when it's time to flower, you tell it, I want a flower, and it goes, oh, we'll flower for you. And the AC Infinity basically puts the plants into flowering mode for you. So AC Infinity 5x5 tent is the way to go. So the second part of the question is, what type of seeds would you recommend for a first-time grower? Would you recommend autos or fems? Of course, you know I'm not a big fan of the autoflower seeds. I just did a full episode about that. So I'm going to recommend photoperiod feminized seeds for a new grower. That sets you up for success. The photoperiod gives you the opportunity to learn the cycles of the plant. If you want to do lollipopping, defoliation, popping, twisting, certain manipulation techniques and low-stress training techniques to your plants, you can learn that stuff with the photoperiod plants. The autoflowers don't give you as much of an opportunity to manipulate and play with them. You don't get to experiment with that veg cycle when you are doing the autoflower plants. So I would recommend the photoperiod feminized, of course, the FEMS. That's going to help you minimize your risk of male plants. And of course, for new growers, I do always recommend the feminized seeds. That just sets you up for success. One more step closer to success. You don't need to watch as closely for male plants in the garden. There is the opportunity with all breeders, with all seeds, that there is that opportunity of a rare male or a rare intersex plant, the dreaded intersex plant from your fem seed. No matter who the breeder is, how good those seeds are, that is still an opportunity. So do pay attention. But the photoperiod feminized seeds are what I would definitely recommend. And you've got a free pack of seeds coming your way, so make sure you check your inbox for a coupon code from iredirect.com. That way you can get yourself a free pack of seeds. I do recommend those photo period feminized seeds. Those are easily accessible and readily available on the website. Let me jump into this and make sure I covered everything. A 3x3 or a 5x5, feminized photo periods, AC Infinity, Irie Genetics, and recently AC Infinity teamed up with Athena Nutrients. So I'm just going to say jump in, get the whole trifecta there. AC Infinity, Irie Genetics, and Athena, that big triangle of power. You can't go wrong. Jump in, grow from your heart. You will do it right. Once again, check that coupon code. Check your inbox for that coupon code for free seeds from iredirect.com. All right, I like the flow of this show. Let's keep this going. I've got another great question here in front of me. This one came from, I don't have their name. This one is from Electron Dawn. Electron Dawn, I like that name. Check your inbox, my dude, because you've got a coupon code for a free pack of seeds at iredirect.com. The question from Electron Dawn goes a little bit like this. Should I be flushing my mother plants to get rid of excess nutrients and then give them pure water for 2 weeks and then start nutrients back up? Absolutely not. Then it says about every 2 or 3 months, give them a flush. What do you think? Guidance would be much appreciated. Thank you for your time. Or maybe there's one of your videos you can point me to that can help me out with this question. Bro, here it is. This is the video with the answer to your question. I gently replied to this listener, this viewer. I said, why would you flush? And then they said, I'm using 2-gallon fiber pots for my mother's. How often should I be flushing the soil? I'm using basic Botanicare veg nutrients. And my reply to this, my response to this is, why do you need to flush? What are you flushing? What are you flushing out? Those plants are using the nutrients that you are feeding them. So you're feeding the plant. The plant is eating that. Unless you see some sort of major problem with your plants, I never recommend a flush. And let me talk about quickly what a flush is. A flush, a purge, if you will. I think it's the same idea. A flush, that is when we would take an amount of water and we would run that through our soil, our media, our soilless mix, and run that through our plant until we get drainage of that water coming out of the bottom of the plant. That is a flush. Feed it just water. The idea is to flush all of the nutrients out of that, the rhizosphere. We want to clean that out, give ourselves a fresh, clean medium is the thought process here. And this listener said, flush it and give them pure water for 2 weeks. Dude, your plants are going to be freaking angry if you don't feed them for 2 weeks. They're going to starve. They're going to get yellow. They're going to get everything deficient. You're going to start seeing problems within the first 7 to 10 days, maybe 3 to 5 days, depending on how big the plants are, how big the containers are, how powerful the lighting is. You're going to notice issues if you flush and do not feed. There's not going to be any nutrition available. So I never recommend a flush with just water, even if it's pH'd water, un-pH'd water, clean water. I don't ever recommend a flush with the intentions of just cleaning out that rhizosphere, cleaning out the root zone. I never recommend that flush. The only reason that it would be reasonable, in my opinion, is if you had a major problem in your plants. If they were showing you everything is fucking wrong, we've been overfed everything, that's when I would consider the flush. But that would be my last option. What I would do instead of that, and this does not apply to this situation. In this viewer situation, no flush, not necessary. Don't do it. Business as usual. Keep going. If you do see a problem, then consider a flush, but consider this option first. And just hear me out, think about it this way. Let's just say you've got a plant. It's showing you a lot of problems. It could be overfed, it could be underfed, it could be a nutrient lockout. We're just not quite sure what's happening. You've showed it to the internet, you've come to the Discord server. Everybody's done that thing like a bunch of old guys with a beer in one hand, a cigarette in the other, fucking stood around the truck and went, I think it's your alternator, I think it's your timing belt, I think it could be the muffler bearing. Everyone has said their statement, what they think it is, but we don't really know what's wrong. There's so many issues appearing and presenting in this plant, we're not exactly sure. We could flush, but that's going to lead to, like I said, deficiencies. It's going to cause more problems. Now the plant is deficient in everything. That's not going to correct anything, in my opinion. I think, in my experience, that's going to make the plant more angry and worse. Now you've got an overwatered rhizosphere. Your root zone is all saturated with water, and now it's just water. Now the plant's going, well, now I'm fucking overwatered and hungry, and I don't know what to do with myself. So it's just going to start freaking out. What I would recommend, mix up for whatever stage of growth you are in. If you were in veg, early flower, mid flower, late flower, those are your basic stages of growth with the cannabis plants. You get four or five different phases here, three trimesters of flower. Whatever phase you are in, mix up a batch of a nutrient solution. So whatever you mix, you got your 5-gallon bucket, your 250-gallon reservoir, mix up a feed solution that you are very familiar with and you know works every time. Every grower has got a go-to recipe that they go, up, the shit's messing up. I better go back to this. When you go back to that recipe that you know works every time, it's going to fix your problem. So go back to this recipe. Make sure that everything you need is in there, your base nutrients, your CalMag, whatever you're going to feed, put some, definitely throw a bunch of recharge in there. Put some silicates in there. I don't know what you feed. We'll go through, I'm trying to think of my lineup. It would be Botanicare Pure Blend Pro. It depends on what stage we're in. We're just going to say we're in veg. It'd be the Botanicare Pure Blend Pro Veg bottle would be the first bottle. Actually, that's wrong. Probably Silica Blast. Some potassium silicates are going to go first. So we got our potassium silicates. We got our base nutrient, a little bit of CalMag, a little bit of Liquid Karma. What else are we going to do in there? Some carbohydrates, a nice carb product would be nice in there. And then some recharge. That's probably enough to Liquid Karma. We're going to add Liquid Karma almost every time. Oh, and Ruby Fulvic from our friends at New Millennium. So then we're going to mix all that stuff up properly. We're going to pH it before we put the recharge in. We'll pH it, get it at the correct pH. I don't know what pH you're using, but somewhere between 6.2 and 6.5, probably get it dialed in. Use a consistent pH. Then we're going to add the microbes, the recharge, give it a good stir. Then we're going to water the plants to a little bit of runoff. I want some water coming out of the bottom of these pots. Enough to where we can actually collect it and measure the EC and pH of that runoff would be really cool. So I recommend mix your solution, check the EC, check the pH of that solution, write that down. Water your plants, get runoff, measure that runoff, write that down as well. We'll deal with that in the future. What I want to do is I want to basically reset the settings in that rhizosphere. Whatever is in there, I want to water that shit right on out, and I want to water it in with brand new feed. Basically give it that whole new meal. Whatever that last meal was, it's sitting in its gut. I just want to push it out with a new meal, make all that stuff fall right out and put a whole new dinner in there so that it can start fresh. That, in my opinion, is the way to restart whatever plant you think needs to be flushed. Because really, that way we're giving it everything it needs at the proper dose, at the proper pH. And that's the best thing you can give the plant, right? The proper feed, the proper nutrients, the proper ratios, the proper temperature, hopefully, the proper pH. Give it everything that it needs and fix it. Just reset that instead of completely fucking disrupting it and then trying to chase it. Because this dude said pure water for 2 weeks. At the end of that 2 weeks, everything is going to be bright yellow. Everything's going to be sad. Then you're going to need to overfeed again. Then you're going to need to catch up with that. And it's just going to look worse. It's going to cause more problems. So I never flush. I think it causes more problems. I would feed with a well-mixed solution at the proper pH and try to achieve approximately 20% runoff if you can. So that means if you poured a gallon of water into that plant, you want 20% of a gallon, maybe a quarter of a gallon, to come out of the bottom of that plant. Then you want to scoop some of that up, and we will measure the EC and pH of that. If it's drastic, high or low, then we will make adjustments. If it came out close to what it went in, we're doing okay. If it's higher or lower, we can understand what's going on from there. We can make adjustments if necessary. But that's my long rant about why I do not flush and why I would recommend mixing a solid solution. Just imagine if you didn't feel good, like if you were sick, like if you woke up tomorrow and you just felt like complete shit. Do you think it would be more beneficial to your body, to your health, if you mixed up a tea and put some vitamins, some nutrients, some minerals, whatever you're going for, if it's an emergency packet, or if you actually go get some fruit and juice and make a fruit juice, anything like that going into you is going to be better than just water, and you're just peeing out all your own vitamins, your own minerals, your own nutrients. You need some electrolytes, you need some vitamins, you need to be replenished. So I think your body would do a lot better if you fed it a little bit instead of just adding water and having to piss a lot. I think the plants are going to act very similarly. We're going to push out all the junk we don't want, replace it with stuff that we do desire. You guys, I am quite rambly on this episode. Big shout out to our friends at Green Dot Labs. I took some dabs of some lemon tree, I think it was, or was it the, you know, it's the lemon buttered rum batter from Green Dot Labs. It has got me battered and rambling. Big shout out to my new friend, Electric Dawn. Electric Dawn, thank you for the great question. You got me rambling quite well. I would not recommend flushing ever unless you see major, major problems. And still, I would flush the little way that I talked about. All right, ladies and gentlemen, now is a good time to click like and subscribe. That's right. If you enjoy what you're watching, go ahead, click like. Also, click subscribe so you never miss any of my amazing cannabis content. Before we go any further, I'm going to do a couple of shout outs to a few of the great folks who support the show on Patreon. That's right. I do have a Patreon campaign. You can find the Patreon campaign at patreon.com/growfromyourheart. You've got to type all that in because I am shadow banned because we are a weed show. Patreon does not approve of that. So you got to type in the whole thing. patreon.com/growfromyourheart. I want to give a few shout outs. I want to send a big shout out to my buddy Lemur Priest. Lemur, dude, it's so good to see you back on the Discord, my bro. Also, let's send a big shout out to my buddy Danny Potts. Danny, it would be cool to see you back on the Discord. I understand the new job's got you busy. Nothing but respect, but we do miss you, my dude. Let you know we're thinking about you. Also, a big shout out to my buddy Roman Roots. Roman Roots, thank you for all the Patreon support. Then we're going to wrap this part up with a big Grow From Your Heart podcast thank you shout out to my good friend Oki Braden. Braden, much love. Thank you for all the great pictures. Thank you for all the support. Cannot wait to see you again at the DGC Cup in 2025. That's right. DGC Cup 2025. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for all the Patreon support. Let's keep this party moving. I do have another great question here in front of me. This one came from somebody who is going to be called Atlean415. Feels like I've heard that somewhere before. Big shout out, my dude. This question, oh, also make sure you check your inbox for that coupon code for the free seeds at iredirect.com. The question goes a little bit like this. It says, I have some general questions I wanted to bounce off of you. You sent me three questions. I'm only going to give you one coupon code for one pack of seeds, but I do appreciate the content. It says, light leaks. Light leaks can wreak havoc on an otherwise tuned-in run. How exactly do outdoor grows deal with a light leak? That is a very good question. I generally address this question around the beginning of outdoor season because people are like, hey, I'm putting my plants outside. There's a street light. There's a fucking porch light. What's going on? This is a good question. So outdoors, why don't little lights disrupt our plants outdoors? Let's see. Outdoor grows deal with light leaks. So a light leak, what is a light leak? That is probably a good spot to start. Indoors, a light leak is what we call it when your nighttime cycle in your grow environment, when it should be dark, when that dark cycle is interrupted and light gets in there, whether it's a little crack in your tent, a little split in your seams, whether a door gets opened, whether a light gets left on, that is a light leak. That can cause detrimental issues to your garden, depending on the frequency, the power, a lot of different factors of that light. The plants simply may not go into flower. It could cause them to express intersex traits. It could wreak havoc on everything, or sometimes nothing could happen. But so that is a light leak. A light leak is when the light gets into your dark cycle. Now we put our plants outdoors and we expect to get full darkness from the outdoor environment and our plants should flower as usual. However, we now live in society where we've got a whole bunch of freaking lights. I don't know if it's your porch light. Like I said earlier, it could be a car driving by. It could be a headlight on a dude on a bike. Now it could be a fucking drone with a bunch of spotlights on it. There are light leaks and light and darkness interruptions now happening to our plants outdoors. Why don't those plants, and also we've got the moon. Let's not forget about that big old skylight that a lot of us use to walk our path at night. The moon, nature's favorite light, the moon out there. Why isn't that light fucking up our garden? That's all a very good question. The first quickest answer is phytochrome red. So let's talk about this. When the sun is setting, when the sun is going down, and also I've got another theory we'll touch on this with. As the sun sets, it starts to put off a spec. It doesn't put off. When the sun sets, it hits the atmosphere in a way that it creates a spectrum of light known as far red lighting. That is a spectrum of light that triggers our plants to do what is called a phytochrome red response. So this, the sun comes to a certain angle of the atmosphere, it creates a certain color, a certain spectrum of lighting. That lighting hits our plants. That light, that color of that light tells our plant, hey, it's sleepy time, I should go night-night. That's why sometimes outside at the outdoor grows, you will see your plants, their leaves are up and perky, they're going, and as the sun begins to set, they will go, whoa, and you'll go, oh, the plants know it's nighttime. Yes, they do, because they are getting far red lighting, which is triggering a phytochrome response in those plants that is telling them, hey, it's time for me to go to sleep. And when those plants are tucked in by the far red lighting, they sleep much more deeply than they would in your basic grow room when you're going from an LED light with fucking six different colors that was made up by man to darkness. Maybe a 1,000-watt LED light in there is probably what most of us are running in a 5x5. So you got 1,000 watts of light, just a little mixed spectrum. That's really cool for your plants. It's working really well. And when that goes off, it's pure darkness. But compare that to the power of the sun. When that sun is cooking, it is the perfect spectrum for your plants. It's the most powerful spectrum. No light meter will ever measure how much sun we're getting compared to a grow light. So all that sunlight compared to your grow light is such a vast difference. So when that sunlight tells those plants, hey, it's time to go to sleep, compared to your grow light, it's like giving them a quadruple dose of NyQuil versus just going, sweet dreams, kids. It's such a big, big difference. So that's why light leaks are so detrimental indoors and can cause such major problems. But outdoors, the plants can take a lot more light problems because that far red light has tucked them in and they're sleeping. They're in there. They've been comatose. They've been tucked in real tight. They've been given that double dose of NyQuil. They took a fat dab. They rubbed one out. They got a full tummy. They're fucking sleeping. They're not going to wake up until that opposite spectrum happens. When the sun rises, it creates a blue and white spectrum that tells those plants, hey, bitches, it's time to wake up and get to work. And you'll see the leaves. The leaves will start swimming. They'll start perking up and start doing their day. That's what happens with that blue light from the sun as it begins to rise. So the main factor is that far red lighting tells them, hey, go to sleep. And then they're soundly tucked in. And the second factor is, your little flashlight, your little headlight on the car does not compare at all to the sun that it's used to seeing. So that's like just pulling the curtain open a little bit and just going, hey, there's a little LED light out there. The plant's going to go, yeah, a little LED, whatever. If you pull open the curtains and the sun's up, we're all going to go, ah, shit, the sun's up. That's the big difference about it. Different spectrum, different intensity, different overall kind of light. So the first answer, far red. The second answer is that major difference in intensity. Now, there are two more parts to this question, which is fun because I'm quite rambly today. Part number two, or number B if you want to, do you have any personal experience with whorled plants? Whorled plants, that is when your leaves that should be sticking straight out and kind of doing this, that's when they look like they're curling, they're getting, they're just twisting all over each other. The leaves are twisting. Whorled means twisting leaves. So if the leaves look like they're spinning around, you got a tornado plant, that's what we're talking about. Most of the time, in my experience, that is a light problem. Most of the time, 99% of the time, that is a light, like a re-veg process. So you've given the plant more light than you were. You've increased the amount of hours that the plant is receiving light. That was harder to say than it looked, but you do podcasting. You'll figure it out. That plant probably went from, we'll say 18.6 to 24.0. And that lack of sleep made that plant go, what the fuck? And it's starting to spin around. Or it was on 12-12 and you put it on 18-6 or 24-0. And now those leaves are starting to twist and curl going, I don't know what to do. So most of the time that whorled plant, the whorled leaves come from too much or a changed light cycle. An increased light cycle is generally what I've noticed that from. It could be other things. Most of the time you're going to find that it is a lighting issue because it's kind of a hormonal thing. Which 90% of the time does come from the lighting. So you probably changed the timer and that plant went fucking nuts or gave it too much light. Now there is a part three, number C. It says when using some type of chemical-induced method for creating pollen from female plants. All right, so when I'm making silver thiosulfate is what they're being specific about and deciding to do open-air pollination. So I'm going to reverse a plant and let that pollen fly into the air. What type of spacing do you give male and female plants during the tail end of the chemical schedule? Okay, I see what you're saying. Where the plants will be into pre-flower, if not flower. So I see what you're saying. And you have kind of overthought it. There's no time when that overlaps. There's no overlapping in this period. What this viewer, listener, questioner is asking, I treat a plant with silver thiosulfate. So I've got a plant. I treat it with silver thiosulfate. I will treat it 7 times over the course of its life, maybe 8 or 9. That's up for debate, but it's going to get 7 solid treatments of this sprayed application of silver thiosulfate. Then after that, it is going to get moved to another room to pollinate some female plants. This person is asking, how much space do I give the male and female plants during that tail end where the plants will be into pre-flower and not flower or end flower? Are those chemicals transferable to nearby plants by the air? And if so, what to extent? So the product I use is, it's water based. So I'm spraying a liquid product on there. It's not really in the air. It's not a gas. It's a liquid. So I'm able to maintain it. I've got a 5x5 tent in one section of the room. And in the other corner of the room is a 3x3 with the reversals. I keep them separate for timing purposes, but I basically take the reversal candidate out of the tent and it sets right in the corner, the other corner of the room. And I apply the silver thiosulfate, sprayed application to it way over there. It's a spray. It's a liquid spray. So it's not like really airborne. I'm not getting that fine of mist. I'm just using a fucking spray bottle like you'd use to clean the windows. It's the same thing. I buy those from Uline. I could see a box of them. I just buy those from Uline and I mix up a 10% and a 30% silver thiosulfate. And I got 2 plants. One's marked with the 10, one's marked with the 30. They're sitting over there and I just spray them. And I don't spray willy-nilly where the spray is going everywhere. So just right behind that plant, which is a white wall, is all that's getting hit with my overspray. So it's not really going anywhere. And then I let it dry completely before I put it back into the tent because, sorry, my computer just went to screensaver and I need my notes here, man. There we go. I let it dry before it goes back into the tent because I don't want the 10 and the 30% dilutions touching each other because I don't want to get confused on which dilution works because I'm making notes on what to use in the future. So I let them dry because also I don't want them under the light when they're wet. That's not good. So I let them dry before they go back into the tent. And then that process concludes around day 21 or day 24. And I do not do my pollination until about day. And so also that process starts 2 weeks ahead before the other plants. So there's only a time period of 2 weeks when this plant is being sprayed, or one week when this plant is being sprayed and the females are in flower. And then I stop spraying that one and he starts creating pollen. She creates pollen and hasn't been sprayed for 7 days before I move it to the other room, at least 7 days. In this situation, it's taken a minute for my girls. One of them isn't showing enough pistils, so I'm hesitating on the pollination. But it's going to be a week or 2 weeks since I've sprayed before the pollination even happens. I quit spraying. I'm trying to do the math here. So let's just say hypothetically, I started spraying silver thiosulfate on December 1st. Then I would have sprayed it the 1st, 3rd, 1, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, up to the 21st day of December. That plant would have gotten sprayed with silver thiosulfate. So we got 21 days of spray. Then I honestly did not put the females into flower until the 16th of December. I gave them 2 weeks advance. I gave the male, the pollen donors, a 2-week head start to get building up their pollen. Then I put the females into flower. Kind of should have timed that about 3 or 5 days different now that I'm seeing what's going on, but I didn't know. So they were into flower 21 days in. Then they went to flower 16 days in. So that means that 5 days in to the flowering process of the females, I stopped applying sprayed solutions to the pollen donors, and they will not receive pollen for probably 10, 12, 14 days after that, maybe even more. So there's going to be a 3 or 4 week time, I think, if I time that properly, where there's no sprayed application in the room at all before those female plants will receive the pollen. And there was no overspray, so those females will not be exposed to silver thiosulfate in any way at all. And if they were, they're not going to get smoked. None of that is going to get smoked. Nothing in that room will be consumed. It is all seeded material. So the plants that got sprayed, they're fully pollen donors. They will get chopped and moved over to the other room and fucking sprinkled all over. Once those plants are done donating their pollen everywhere, they get cut into small pieces, put into a compost bin. They're gone. They're done. The boy plants or the female pollen donors, they're removed from the room. They're not even a thought anymore. And then those female plants, they've received pollen. None of that's going to get smoked. It is all loaded with seeds if I do it correctly. There's nothing smokable. So there's been no overspray and there's been a long time gap. So there's no concern for chemical, what's the word you're using, chemical methods, transferable, no chemical transference to nearby plants by air and to what extent. So it's a good idea, but I think you're kind of overthinking it. There's a time gap. Day 21 is when I quit spraying, and that's like day 5 of when I put the other girls into flower, and they're not going to get pollen in for like 20 days from that. So there's like a nice period from when the pollen has been flying to, or from when the silver has been flying to when the pollen flies, and a big space in the room. All right, I think I rambled about that one for quite some time. All right, my dude, Atlean415, thank you once again for the great question. Make sure you check your inbox for a coupon code because you want a free pack of seeds from iredirect.com. All right, ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls, pimps and hoes, friends and foes, smokers, growers, clone cutters, pollen chuckers, all of you beautiful cannabis enthusiasts out there, I do want to thank you once again for listening to another episode of the Grow From Your Heart podcast. I'm going to wrap this up quickly because this has been a good show and all I could do now is ruin it. So let's get out while we're winning. Thank you once again for listening. If you have any questions, corrections, comments, or concerns, you know that I would love to hear from you. My email address is growfromyourheart@hotmail.com. Reach out, let me know what you think of the show. If you want your grow question read on the podcast, the way to do it is through that Grow Help tab at iregenetics.com. Everything else you could possibly need is at iregenetics.com. There's a link to the Discord server, there's a link to the Patreon server, and there's a link to iRedirect so you can get those seeds where the New Year's pricing is happening. That's right, check iredirect.com for New Year's pricing. I think that's all I've got for you for this week. I'll be back in a week with fresh new content. I want to give a big shout out to my friend Kevin B. And until next time, take a fat dab and give your mom a hug for me.
Rasta Jeff, you bad motherfucker.
Time to take another dab. Grab your piece and then I go find the bag. Rasta Jeff is in the lab. Sit back, hug your mom, be relaxed.
Hold up. Roots and wisdom start to show. From the knowledge seeds we grow. Tune in now to hear the vibe. Rasta Jeff in our conscious tribe. He spreads the truth in every word. Every voice must now be heard. Healing light through cannabis. Grow from your heart, pure bliss. Rise up higher, find your way. Grow from your heart every day. Stand real strong. Join the movement. Sing the song. Natural medicine and love flows within us like a dove. Educate and elevate. Join the journey. Don't be late. Open minds to see the truth. In the soil lies the proof. Rasta Jeff will guide you through. In this garden, find the new. Rise up higher, find your way. Grow from your hearts every day. In the light, we stand real strong. Join the movement, sing the song. Ooh. 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 Open minds to see the truth. In the soil lies the proof. Rasta Jeff will guide you through. In this garden, find the new. Rise up higher, find your way.